This is a special InvestTalk bonus podcast. InvestTalk host Justin Klein talks with Lifeline's Craig Roberts.
We're joined now by Justin Klein. Justin is CEO of Klein, Pavlis and Peasley Financial, KPP Financial. He is co-host of InvestTalk, heard each Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. on our sister station, Business Radio AM 1220 KDOW. And Justin, a delight to have you join us. Welcome back.
It's a delight to be here, Craig. And you missed one thing on that news rundown. Is after the bell, the Fitch just downgraded our credit rating as a country.
Ooh, ouch. Okay, so while I was going to share a story about an uptick in consumer confidence, Fitch apparently doesn't have much confidence in the U.S. And give us your perspective on that, both in terms of what went into their decision to downgrade our credit rating, as well as what that ultimately may potentially mean for retirees or people saving for retirement.
Well, their reasoning is certainly sound. Obviously, our fiscal situation is becoming more and more difficult as time goes on. And a lot of it has to do with off-balance sheet liabilities, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security liabilities coming on balance sheet with so many baby boomers retiring and getting older. And that's just something that most demographers could see from a mile away. So this is something that should have been pretty obvious decades ago, and we'll probably have to deal with it at some point. What are the near-term ramifications? Probably not that much. I mean, you're talking about going from AAA to AA+. You know, we still have the ability to finance ourselves, at least in the short to medium term. You know, what does that mean for the dollar longer term? You know, I don't think we're going to be bankrupt or anything like that, but you know, could that mean in more inflation down the line? I think that's certainly true. So I think it just tells you that we are in a new regime, a new environment where inflation is going to be different than it has been in the past, and it's probably going to be a bit higher. It doesn't have to be runaway inflation. This isn't Zimbabwe or anything like that. But a higher level of inflation is probably what's to be expected going forward.
Yeah, and that certainly can't be very good news to the Fed. I mean, we just saw them last week engage in their 11th rate increase in about 12 months, I think. We're now seeing what I guess the impact of the overnight lending rate really influences everything, whether you're buying a home, buying a car, or even spending money on your credit card and letting it sit there for a while. That means it's going to be a lot more expensive in a lot of ways for Americans. So what, we have two choices, I guess, either spend less or at the end of the day spend more through higher interest rates and ultimately higher inflation.
Yeah, well, I think you're talking about kind of two separate things. So, you know, the Fitch thing is about the government, and then there's the individual. And in fact, the individual, yes, there are higher costs of a mortgage and buying cars and the interest rate sensitive parts of the economy. But in general, it's actually been not that bad of a setup for most Americans, especially those that locked in mortgage rates at 3%, you know, a few years back. And their carrying costs for that hasn't changed. It's kind of, I don't know if you know this, but it's pretty rare to have 30-year mortgages. In Europe, those are they're more floating rate. They reset every 2 to 5 years, et cetera. We're here in the U.S., most people have those low fixed mortgages. So what's actually happening is a lot of individuals now have savings, and they're actually earning something on their savings now. And they're actually having what is called positive carry. They're borrowing at 3 in their mortgage, and they're actually getting paid 5.5% now on their cash by investing in treasuries, money market accounts, CDs, etc. So this is a new environment that most people aren't used to. And in fact, higher interest rates, perplexingly, in some ways, is actually perpetuating inflation going forward and today. And it's in some parts of the economy, and in other parts, you're correct, there is some drag.
Wow. And that certainly creates a bit of a quandary for the Fed as they're raising rates in an effort to try and get a handle on inflation and kind of cool the afterburners of the economy. And we've certainly seen, I think, some movement in the positive direction in that regard, that we're beginning to see a downtick in inflation. Although, interestingly enough, you talk about real estate, that really hasn't impacted real estate very much, and not certainly in areas areas like the San Francisco Bay region, down south towards L.A., San Diego, many of those parts of the state continue to be, while perhaps not as crazy as they were, say, this time a year ago, or even 2 years ago, when you could get a good 30-year fixed for, what, barely 3%. Now it's more than twice that number. How much of a chilling effect has the interest rates had on real estate? And given the demand here in California, what is your sense of the forecast in terms of how real estate is going to look, both for first-time home buyers or people that are looking at real estate as an investment in the next few years?
Well, you're correct that the marginal home buyer, the first-time home buyer, they are pretty much priced out of the market. But there's always that certain level of certain number of home buyers that they're not that interest rate sensitive, mainly because they have cash, they have high income, so doesn't really matter the carrying cost to them purchasing. You've kind of hit that level. So, what's happening more is the volume is just very, very low. The amount of inventory on the market is very, very low because we've been underbuilding for a long period of time. And, the prices are coming down, but they're coming down slowly. And a lot of people make this huge mistake. And what they do is they look at the last recession and they look at the next recession through that lens. Mm. And if you look back through history, almost never is the catalyst for the previous recession the same catalyst for the recession going forward. Why? It's because we are humans and we feel the pain. Everyone felt the pain from 08. So what do the people do? We put in a mechanism to make it so it's harder to get a mortgage. So only mortgages go out to those people with very high credit ratings. There aren't the no-doc mortgages anymore. And I don't know if you've had it refinance or get a mortgage in the last 10 years or so. You have to jump through a million hoops to do so. And so it's there's not a lot of forced sellers. 08, there was a ton of forced sellers, the jingle mail and all that. So this is not that environment. And so will the housing market continue to correct? Yes, but the housing market's slow. It takes a lot of time. And it's probably going to still be another 2, 3, 4 years before the market fully kind of corrects and gets back into a healthy equilibrium, which we're not there yet. And so I think in California, especially the Bay Area, I've said this for a while, the workers within the tech industry, they're not cashing out huge stock bonuses and things like that anymore, so they're not able to put money down, a couple million dollars easily down on a home. A lot of people are moving out because they see better opportunities, cheaper places to live, and still work from home now as opposed to having to go in the office. So I think the Bay Area certainly is going to be weaker than, say, Southern California. But in general, the high-priced markets are going to probably continue to struggle under the weight of higher interest rates. But it doesn't mean it has to be a housing crash or anything like that. It's just a modest, continual, consistent correction that will happen probably over a number of years. And, on the investment side, the cap rates in California are just very, very low. They remain very, very low. And now you can get good, say, corporate bonds yielding 7%, which is much better than a lot of the cap rates you're getting on real estate here in California and a lot of parts of the United States. So a lot of people are turning towards that, where they're able to get, without any worries, not have to deal with any tenants or anything like that, they're clipping their coupons on a lot of bonds that are yielding 6, 7, 8%.
And that's pretty remarkable. I mean, considering where the bond market was just a few years ago, even CDs, my goodness, we haven't talked about CDs, Justin, outside of in the context of music mm-hmm. in decades. And now all of a sudden I'm hearing people say, it's certainly not going to be a way that I'm going to get rich overnight, but 5, 5.25% guaranteed over, 9 months, 12 months is not such a bad deal, at least compared to the 0.0001 percentile that we were seeing just a scant year and a half ago.
Yeah, absolutely, and it makes a lot of sense for people, and especially those that everyone's been chasing yield for a long period of time, trying to get three years ago, you were getting 5% on junk bonds, right? Companies that have pretty low credit ratings. That's all you were going to get, which is around the 5% level. Now you can get those on treasuries, and so it's a lot better environment for people to go out there and earn solid, consistent yields. And so it's a new environment, new world. Interest rates go through these long, multi-decade cycles, usually 30 to 40 years up and 30 to 40 years down. We just finished that from the early 80s up until just the last couple of years when interest rates really broke out to the upside. And we think because inflation is likely to remain relatively persistently above what we're used to, it's not going to be this 1% to 2% disinflationary environment that we saw, you know, through the 90s and early 2000s. It's going to be probably somewhere in the neighborhood of a 4% to 5% average inflation over the next couple of decades. And that's due to, you know, dollar probably weakening, but also deglobalization. You're seeing that right now in a big way. Obviously, regionalization of supply chains. You have a bifurcated world with, you know, Russia and China and the East versus, you know, Europe and the U.S. and the West and our allies. So all of those geopolitical concerns are also going to push inflation higher, which means interest rates probably headed higher over the long term. Obviously, there can be drops. Maybe, you know, the Fed cuts rates next year. That's certainly possible. But for now, you likely are seeing inflation and interest rates headed higher.
You make a reference to what I'll call the long game, and I want to spend some time unpacking that when we come back, because that sense of instant gratification is something that we Americans are used to, right? Who but an American looks at the microwave, you know, trying to heat up a cup of water for coffee and is complaining that it didn't boil in under a minute, right? This is the way we see things. We want that sense of instantaneous gratification, but is that necessarily a formula for financial success when it comes to planning for retirement? We'll talk about the short versus the long game as our conversation with Justin Klein, CEO of KPP Financial, co-host of Invest Talk, heard Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. on our sister station, AM 1220 KDOW. Invite you to check them out, kppfinancial.com. That's kppfinancial.com. We'll take a time out. Back to more insights as our conversation with Justin Klein continues on this edition of Life.
This is a special InvestTalk bonus podcast. InvestTalk host Justin Klein talks with Lifeline's Craig Roberts.
Talking about markets, money, retirement planning with Justin Klein, CEO of KPP Financial and co-host of InvestTalk, heard Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. on our sister station AM 1220 KDOW. Justin, prior to the break, you made reference to long-term planning, long game, I'll call it. And, you know, it's interesting. You talk about human behavior, and I know to a great degree what you do in your business is analyzing not only human thinking, human behavior, our relationships to money, and how we manage it or fail to manage it. Certainly the notion of what happened last month will be used as a guide for what we're going to do in the future, right? How many people walk through the checkout stand at the grocery store, look at the front page of a newspaper or maybe a periodical, and we look at a list of the top producing stocks of the last quarter and think, oh, I'm just going to buy this and see what did well, and then copy it on my online investments, and off I go to retirement land. But it doesn't work that way. Help us understand, when we talk about the long game for retirement planning, what do people need to be doing? What kind of approach is necessary in order to arrive at the kind of money pile that's going to be necessary to take us through retirement?
Well, the first is to not do what you just said, right? Chasing those returns over the past month or quarter or even year. Because typically, that's a terrible way to invest. It's emotional. And frankly, that's how most average people invest. They invest with their emotions because we are humans and we are emotional beings. And so when you don't have any basis or good basis for searching and finding the right investments for you, you turn to emotions, which is kind of our natural programming. So what it's really about, the real investing is about understanding the assets, the risks versus rewards of the companies, of the assets that you're looking at, and making investments, true investments in quality assets, quality businesses, not just what's hot at the moment. Because what can be hot today can easily turn cold tomorrow. And nothing highlighted that more than the post-COVID era, you know, 2020, 2021, And everybody was jumping into these tech stocks, and they were extrapolating this growth, saying, hey, we were going to see this huge shift to work from home, and the whole world has changed. And that certainly is true. But what they did was they overestimated the type of growth and the sustainability of the growth that was taking place in 2020 and 2021. And nothing highlights that more than Zoom. Remember, everybody was on Zoom. They thought Zoom was this incredible company, and everybody and their mother was going to have a Zoom subscription because that's how you're going to operate and do business. And the stock went from pre-pandemic right around $60, and it went to a high of nearly 600. So almost a thousandfold, right, from pre-pandemic. Well, today it's back down to $72, so barely up from its pre-pandemic level. And why is that? Is because it was hot money, and while Zoom's business is fine and their product is good, it's nothing special. There's a lot of products out there where you can do video conferencing and just as good, if sometimes even better than Zoom. And so what most people do is they try to hop on these trains, and they have no mechanism to understand whether these are quality businesses, what if I should buy it now or later, and what about the economic backdrop? It can be a good company today, but the economic backdrop just isn't working in that particular environment, for example. So when you're looking at long-term investing, you really have to have you don't want to have a myopic view of just a short period of time. You want to look long-term to know if this fits you as with your investment strategy, your risk tolerance level, and whether or not it's a quality asset long-term.
So that long-term approach is going to be critically important. I guess that also means that you need to have a strategy in place, because there's going to be some ups and downs along the way. And certainly these bumps on the radar screen, while perhaps not as significant as the 2008-2009 downturn, the 2000.com bubble bean burst, or even going back, probably nobody in this audience remembers, but going back to the days of the Great Depression. I mean, those were kind of anomalies to what are the normal market cycles, but the market does cycle. And so I suppose then having a roadmap looking ahead to carry you through those cyclical moments, because it really needs to be, as you're suggesting, forward thinking, doesn't it? I mean, you know, there's aspects of lessons of history that can be valuable, but when it comes to investing, that really isn't that helpful of a tool, is it?
No, it's not. And having a plan is, you're right, seeing through any wiggles in the market or the economy, and knowing that your strategy makes sense for your situation, and that you're investing in companies and businesses or assets in general that have long-term sustainability, not stories. So many people get caught up in stories. They read an article, or they talk to their cousin or their friend or their brother, and they get caught up in the story. And that's not what really investing is about. Investing isn't about a story. Investing is about businesses and cash flow and earnings, and then understanding where is that going? Not what it did today, not what it did during COVID, but how does that fit in the world that we are in? Not in the world that you wish it to be. A lot of people use their political viewpoint, whether that's left or that's right, whatever that is, and they try to invest you using that lens. And that's one of the big mistakes most people make, is they invest for the world that they wish it to be, as opposed to the world that it is. And that will guide your success. It doesn't. The market doesn't care what your political leanings are. It matters. It cares what is actually going to happen going forward. And we think we're in an environment where, whether you like it or not, we're kind of regionalizing our supply chains. We're bringing a lot of manufacturing back to the United States. I don't know if you know this, but right now there is a 78% increase in spending on manufacturing facilities. CapEx spending and manufacturing facilities here in the United States year over year. Okay, so there's a massive boom in manufacturing facility production, and that's an environment where demand for manufactured goods here in the United States is actually shrinking. So imagine how good that would be if we had an environment where everyone started to buy things again. You know, we're kind of in this phase where people had bought a bunch of things during the pandemic, and now we have a bunch of stuff, and now we're spending it on experiences, going out to eat, traveling, et cetera. These regionalized supply chains are definitely going to be a driver of the economy going forward, and you have to adjust the companies you're investing in accordingly. You know, the raw materials, energy, industry, those are going to be, I think, the best places to be invested over the next decade or two as we bring our supply chains back home.
So certainly now the shift that used to be the emerging markets were all located overseas. Now more and more we're seeing them here closer to home. In fact, very near the Apple spaceship, the Apple campus. They're getting ready to build yet another mega campus for Applied Materials to begin manufacturing chips right here where they all started. Amazing stuff. There was a commercial that came out probably a decade ago. If you are old enough, you might remember it. It essentially was a marketing commercial for Buick, and it sort of reinvented the Buick automobile with the tagline, "Not your father's Buick." Can the same be said of retirement now, that it's not your parents' or your grandparents' retirement? It's your retirement, and yours will be a lot different than theirs. We'll talk about that next. Our conversation continues with CEO of KPP Financial, Justin Klein. Justin, co-host of InvestTalk, heard Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. on our sister station, AM 1220 KDOW. By the way, if you'd like to get more information about Justin, his good work, maybe you're in a position where many of the things that we've talked about on the program so far are beginning to pique your interest, or you have that sense of, gee, from what Justin has said, I don't think I'm on the right track. I'm a little bit nervous. Where can I get some help? I invite you to reach out to Justin. You can get more information online at kppfinancial.com. That's kppfinancial.com. Back to more insights with Justin Klein as Lifeline continues.
Let's say you've been thinking about learning a new language. Okay, why? I mean, how would it come in handy? And where would you want to use it? Could it be that you have an upcoming international trip? Or maybe you want to connect with family members or friends from a different culture? I think you should know about Rosetta Stone. With millions of users, it's been the world's most trusted language learning program for 30 years. Rosetta Stone is available on your desktop or as an app with audio companion and the ability to download lessons offline. Rosetta Stone truly immerses you in the language you want to learn. It has a built-in, patented speech recognition engine called True Accent. So as you practice speaking, you'll get feedback on how well you pronounce words. With Rosetta Stone, you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. It's an intuitive process designed for long-term retention. You really learn to speak, listen, and think in your new language. Rosetta Stone is an amazing value, so your special skill set is within easy reach. You know you want to do this, so don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, InvestTalk listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off now at rosettastone.com/today. At this point, I think almost everyone has heard how generative AI promises to bring us to the next industrial revolution. AI is already shaping society with an impact on daily life that echoes the transformative significance of electricity or the internet. As we take steps to embrace the potential of generative AI, we need to remain vigilant with regard to its exploitability. This is where HackerOne comes in. HackerOne's AI Red Team addresses the novel challenges of AI safety and security for businesses that are launching new AI deployments. The HackerOne approach involves targeted offensive testing by harnessing the collective skills of ethical hackers who are proficient in AI and prompt hacking. In short, AI red teaming is the practice of stress testing AI models and deployments to make sure they can't be tricked into providing information beyond their intended use. and that security flaws can't be exploited to access confidential data or systems. HackerOne seamlessly integrates with your existing tools to enhance communication and collaboration across development, security, and IT teams. So, stay ahead of the game in the battle against cyber threats with HackerOne's Attack Resistance Platform. Learn more at HackerOne.com. That's HackerOne.com, HackerOne.com.
This is a special InvestTalk bonus podcast. InvestTalk host Justin Klein talks with Lifeline's Craig Roberts.
We continue our discussion with Justin Klein, CEO of Klein Pavlis Peasley Financial, KPP Financial, and co-host of InvestTalk, heard Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. on our sister station, Business Radio 1220 KDOW. And certainly, Justin, it's not that long ago that a decent pension, Social Security, and hopefully somewhere along the way, a mortgage-burning party would probably mean you would have an okay retirement. It may not be a trip around the globe or vacationing in Paris every year, but you could still comfortably retire. But that's changed pretty dramatically, hasn't it? And with more and more companies scuttling their pension plans and looking at the downward pressure on Social Security, you alluded to that even in your opening remarks tonight, it would seem to me that it really is going to be incumbent upon all of us to really start to get serious about retirement planning. But how do we encourage people to get started?
Well, the way that I do it is I stress the savings part most of all. And a lot of people, they look at either the real estate market or the stock market, and they think that is their ticket to financial independence. And what I've seen throughout the years is that it's not nearly as much about the investment side as it is about the saving side. You have to save consistently. You have to have a savings mechanism and a habit that will keep you moving forward, taking steps forward week after week. That's one of the reasons why, going back to the pension discussion, most people, they had a pension because who was putting money away for them? It was the company that putting away for them. Now, each individual has to do that, but they have to do that through their 401k, and it's an automatic savings mechanism, and that's why most people amass their largest fortune through their 401ks, because of that consistency in savings. So that's number one, is creating that savings habit and doing that consistently throughout your life. And then taking that money and being smart with it and investing it, so you're growing it consistently over time, and you're not having huge giant swings that are going to cause you to make bad decisions at the wrong time, either when the market's down or when the market's up. You know, you talked before about people looking at the hottest stocks and chasing, you know, the hottest sector. You see this all the time with these thematic ETFs. You know, there's a lot of ones that are covering AI right now, and AI is a hot theme. But the vast majority of those names are drastically overvalued or terrible long-term investments because of the valuation. So that's an example where people are making the wrong decision when everything's overhyped. Happened the other way, which you saw that, I'm sure you and many of the listeners out there know people that saw what happened in 08. They liquidated all their portfolios probably just around the wrong time, and they probably haven't, some of them maybe have not never gotten back in, but it's, for a lot of people it took years for them to get back in. So both of those can be ruinous over the long term for a retirement plan. So it's not about you're never going to pick the high, you're never going to pick the low. It's about saving consistently and investing in quality businesses, quality assets that are going to return above average inflation over the long term. This isn't a get-rich-quick type of endeavor. This is a get-rich-slowly endeavor, and that includes saving as well as investing prudently.
And do strategies like market sector rotation become critically important? Because let's, for example, say a lot of people just at the onset of COVID said, wow, folks are being hospitalized. Everybody's talking about health care. So I'm going to plow all my money into pharmaceuticals and hospital chains and things of this sort, because that seemed to be the direction that, things were happening in. Now, of course, the lion's share of at least the worst part of COVID seems to be behind us. There's even been talk in the news about the potentiality of having find something now that could permanently prevent the transmission of COVID, which is very encouraging news. But does this suggest then, as we talk about this ongoing motion in the market, these cycles that you spoke of earlier, that incorporating things like market sector rotation becomes more and more important?
Well, it does to a degree, but not nearly in the way that you talked about. So what you spoke about was the story. And that's not a great way to invest. It's actually a very poor way to invest, is to latch onto the story. The better way to do it, which is what we do, is look at both the macro backdrop, really, is the growth and the inflation in the economy. Is growth increasing or is growth decreasing? Is inflation increasing or is it decreasing? And in those, there's four different outcomes there. And depending on that, certain sectors tend to do well in certain environments. For example, if the economy is growing and inflation is ebbing, right, coming down, usually the consumer does better because unemployment's falling, you have more disposable income, and they spend more. And vice versa, if the flip side is happening, the economy is slowing, and you have inflation coming down, well, most people are, inflation going up, most people are maybe losing their jobs, worried about losing their jobs, they're going and buying more consumer staples, right? And so those sectors tend to do well. So it's really about the economic backdrop. You're talking about sector rotation, not based on the theme of what is hot now or what's in the news. That is usually a terrible way to allocate capital. It's more about the economic backdrop and which companies are increasing their earnings and which ones are struggling during the current economic times.
When you look at a strategic approach to this, there's the old adage, when it comes to finding criminals, follow the money, right? They've said that for years. Is the same thing true when it comes to investing, in terms of being able to gauge where, let's say, the big money is going? You know, we're talking about the top tier folks, where the banks are putting their money, and others. Is there a way to ascertain that and kind of use that as a bit of a clue as to where things might be headed next?
Yeah, it's definitely important to follow where the big boys are moving money. And there's two types of big boys in this environment. One is actually these large index funds. And so when people have jobs, and that's one reason why the stock market hasn't really fallen off a cliff over the past year or so, is because people have jobs. They're putting money in their 401ks, and 401ks are kind of legislated now to where they have to go into the index funds. And the index funds are weighted towards these large cap stocks. And when the market goes up, these large cap stocks tend to get the outsized amount of the dollars. And so that's what you really have to follow, are those fund flows. And those are certainly important. There are other fund flows that come from big institutions. There's some complexities there when it comes to option trading and positioning and things like that, and that's certainly something to follow. But what I'm actually following right now is the Treasury. The Treasury is issuing a lot of debt, and what they do when they issue a lot of debt is they pull liquidity out of the market. And whether they're going to issue long-term debt versus short-term debt, that changes the dynamics as well. And so in an environment where the debt issue has continued to be kicked up into the sovereign level, right? We had this problem when it came to 08, and that was on the household balance sheet, okay? And then that was kicked up to corporations, okay, and banks, and there's a lot of debt built up there. And now after COVID, it was kicked up to the government, who has the biggest debt problem. And so this is an environment where what they do is very, very important. And are they issuing a lot of long-term debt, and that's going to pull out liquidity out of the market, or are they issuing more short-term debt, which doesn't do so as much? And so there are definitely some large factors that play into where money is flowing, and it's important to follow that where that kind of institutional decision making is happening.
Yeah, I was just going to say the institutional money can often be a bit of an indicator, as they are kind of with their eye on the future, moving money around that might give you a clue as to what the next trend might be, that you can kind of catch the wave, shall we say. If you've just joined us, you're catching the retirement planning wave with Justin Klein, CEO of Klein Pavlis and Peasley Financial, KPP Financial. You can check him out every weekday afternoon. He co-hosts Invest Talk, heard at 4 p.m. on our sister station, AM 1220, KDOW. We'll take a brief time out. When we come back, how do you go about ascertaining just how much of a nest egg will you need to make sure your nest remains nice and cozy for the entirety of your retirement? Folks are living longer. This strategy is becoming more and more important. That part of the discussion with Justin Klein as Lifeline continues.
This is a special InvestTalk bonus podcast. InvestTalk host Justin Klein talks with Lifeline's Craig Roberts.
Continue our conversation tonight with Justin Klein, CEO of KPP Financial and co-host of Invest Talk, heard Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. on our sister station, AM 1220 KDOW. Anytime you're in the mood for some business news, get a sense of what's going on in the world and its impact on your financial life, check them out at AM 1220 KDOW, Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. You know, when folks my age, certainly, Justin, get together maybe over dinner and start talking about how far off are you from retirement and things of this sort, I find that on occasion the conversation will turn to a quandary that oftentimes people say, you know, I know I need discipline. I know I need to be saving. I know I need to set money aside for short-term needs, long-term needs, right? You know, certainly aggressively planning for retirement, especially as you grow closer to your 60s. But the one question that seems to puzzle a lot of people is, how much is enough? And I realize there's no such thing as one size fits all. You can't give anybody on the radio that number. But for folks listening saying, okay, give me some insights. What is the formula? How do I go about generally calculating how much of a nest egg I'm going to need to take me safely to and through retirement?
Well, you're definitely correct. Everybody is different. Some people want to sit at home with their grandkids, and that's going to be their retirement, and that doesn't cost a lot of money, right? Maybe some gifts for your grandkids, things like that, taking them to Disneyland or trips and things like that. But others want to golf a lot, others want to travel a lot, and there's very varying levels of cost to all of that. And so everybody's definitely different. Now, the standard rule is 4%. That changes a lot. I think it's becoming probably more ingrained. I think 4% makes sense for most people still. But life expectancy continues to go up. So that's a good thing, that we're living longer. In many ways, we're living healthier lives, especially if you have good habits. But it is really about putting a plan together that incorporates everything from risk tolerance level to how much, what type of lifestyle you want to lead in retirement, how much you want to leave to your next of kin as well, or maybe to a church or some other nonprofit. You know, those are all variables that change how much somebody really needs in retirement. And so that's what we do for clients, along with the investment side and building strategies. But you're right, it is becoming more and more complex, like you said at the top of the show. But the 4% rule, I think for most people, still applies. Basically saying that, hey, I need an amount to take 4% out of my retirement accounts each year based on my expenses. And some people, that's 50 grand a year. Some people might be 500 grand a year. It just depends on the person.
So you're looking at a combination of whatever your Social Security number is going to be. They used to send you a birthday card. Now I understand you have to go online, but you can still get that estimation from the SSA to determine what your anticipated retirement will be. And there's certainly different stages, whether you reach full retirement. I think you get something like 8% additional for every year beyond your full retirement age that you delay it up to the age of 70. So those factors, and then perhaps what? If you maybe have some rental income, other potential sources, coupled with then that percentile that you're removing out of that nest egg every year. And I guess the one thing, you know, talking about our retirement not being our grandparents' retirement, for a lot of our grandparents, my goodness, Justin, they retired at 65 or 68. They lived for a few years, maybe took a couple of cruises, and then by the time they were in their mid to late 70s, they were gone. And now you're finding people that are living to 85, 95. I think that we're at a world record of the number of centenarians that are alive today, which means you could almost wind up spending as much time of your life retired as you did in the working world, assuming you got started in your 20s. And so I guess that really means that the size of that nest egg, dependent upon how fast you spend it and how comfortable you want to be, it can potentially really grow exponentially with the longevity tables going to where they're at.
Absolutely. And you did throw in the Social Security aspect, which I don't think Social Security is going away. There's some easy ways to kind of fix things. A lot of them are politically unpalatable for either side, but I think eventually we'll probably get there. But you know, allowing that to grow, like you said, 8% after your full retirement age up until age of 70, I think is important. Even if you have to pull out a little bit more from your IRAs or 401ks, as long as you're healthy, it's probably a good idea to wait until you're 70. And it's even more important in this environment where inflation is likely to remain elevated. I think I talked earlier about how Social Security recipients this year got a 9% increase in their payments. And most studies actually show that most retirees don't feel the full effects of retirement as much as the average person, because they're not driving as much, they're not buying as many clothes, et cetera. But it's important to, when you're getting that 9% increase, the bigger that base is, the more it's going to consistently grow over time. And that's a guaranteed growth, right? This isn't like maybe I'm going to earn 7 or 8% or something in the markets. This is guaranteed from the government that you're going to get that COLA increase. And so you want to probably wait as long as possible to try to allow the COLA adjustments over time that are likely to be elevated to hit a larger number.
For a lot of people, this process is bewildering. It is confusing. It's like preparing to pay your taxes on April 15th of every year, multiplied by 1,000. And a lot of people just decide, you know, this is more than I can handle. I'm going to seek out the advice of a professional because it's just well beyond my pay grade. Toward that end, for folks that have eavesdropped on our conversation today, Justin, that say, yeah, you know, you guys have really hit on a number of key points that's raising questions for me, and I think I've decided I need some help. Folks want to get more information about being able to take advantage of a remote appointment with you, what do they need to do?
Well, the easiest thing is to head over to our website, kppfinancial.com. If they want to learn more about InvestTalk, just go to InvestTalk.com and listen to some shows. You'll get a lot out of that. And mainly it's about having the right mindset for making smart decisions. And sometimes people can do that themselves, and others, they don't feel like they have the time, the discipline, the data, the expertise to do it themselves, and they hand that over to us. And then they can head over to kppfinancial.com, click on the portfolio review tab on the top right, and schedule a call with me.
See how easy that is? So check it out at KPP Financial, the broadcast Invest Talk, heard Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. on our sister station, AM 1220 KDW. You want to stay on top of the latest financial news and its impact on your retirement? Then check out Invest Talk, Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. and AM 1220 KDOW. Our guest today is the CEO of KPP Financial and co-host of Invest Talk, Justin Klein. Justin, as always, a delight to spend some time with you. Thanks so much for carving out a bit of your busy schedule for us.
Thank you for having me.
This has been a special Invest Talk bonus podcast. Justin Klein interviewed by Craig Roberts of Lifeline. Learn more anytime and get your free InvestTalk podcast downloads at investtalk.com.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. It's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.